evening, my friends. Good evening and welcome. You are listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whalen. Welcome to the program and welcome to Friday evening. As I mentioned, just about an hour here or so, and then it'll be midnight and then officially Saturday. But about 11 to 1 a.m., p.m. here in the Central Time Zone. And it is, of course, March 9th, 2007. Welcome to all of you joining us on shortwave at frequency 3.215. Welcome to all of you listening online at republicbroadcasting.org, as well as franklyspeakingradio.com. As per usual here, we're trying to iron out some technical difficulties, and I am on the phone here for this first break, but I imagine we'll get it taken care of here very, very quickly. Very exciting program this evening. My guest will be joining us after the break. His name is Joseph Farrell. He's joined us before. Of course, he's written books like Reich of the Black Sun, The SS Brotherhood of the Bell. Tonight, we're going to talk about the Giza Death Star series, three books in this trilogy, hence, of course, the fact that it's a trilogy. The Giza Death Star Deployed and the Giza Death Star Destroyed. It's about the Great Pyramid and sort of its agenda. Now, calling it the Giza Death Star kind of gives you an idea of maybe what it was used for. But, you know, I guarantee you that you're going to hear some things you've never heard of before, quite simply because my guest is that good, his research is that fantastic, and I'm looking forward to it. Now, I invite all of you, of course, to always be a part of the program. It's very easy to do. You just pick up the phone and you dial 1-800-313-9443, toll-free and worldwide, 1-800-313-9443. So the last time we had Joseph Farrell on, he stayed, I think, almost for the whole show, if not the entire show. Anyway, it was amazing. He's got tons and tons and tons of information. So we'll be discussing that this evening. What is the Great Pyramid? What was it used for? What was its point? What was going on at the time? How was it built? What was sort of the different technologies going into it? We'll also discuss, I imagine, Tesla technologies, because they are very, very much in line with each other. And then, of course, secret societies and various influences like that. But this is just going to be a huge amount of information coming your way, and I'm looking forward to it. It's always a pleasure to have Joseph on the program, and I, of course, enjoy any time we're here on the last day of the week, just because it's the last day of the week. And I get a lot more sleep these days, but at the same time, you know, it is a nice opportunity, of course, to have some time away, you know, go take a day off or two and just do something completely different and recharge the batteries in every possible conceivable way so we can bring you a good series of programs next week as well. But, yeah, it's been an interesting day. It was supposed to rain all day. It was technically supposed to rain all weekend here in northwest Arkansas. We had a little bit of rain, but then it cleared up. It stayed warm, and the sun was out. It was actually a pretty nice day. So hopefully your day was good. Hopefully your weekend will be a good one. But until then, of course, we're going to mix it up here on the program and have some fun. Also, of course, I mentioned this last night. I mentioned it again tonight. I'm sure I'll mention it again at some other point. Don't forget Daylight Savings. Okay, it takes place this weekend. Now, that's where you set the clocks ahead an hour. So for those who don't change, I'm not even sure exactly where. I think it's Arizona and Indiana, maybe. I'm not sure. Anyway, the show might be at a different time for you guys, so be cognizant of that. And if you live in those areas, I'm sure you know all this already. But it is 3 weeks earlier than it usually is when we do this sort of thing, so be aware of that. Okay, so that would be technically Sunday morning, 2 a.m., or Saturday night, really late if it's a good night for you, I guess. You'll be setting the clocks ahead an hour. Okay? Keep all that in mind. Also, as I said, be aware of the phone number, 800-313-9443. And there it is. Yes, right on time. The music is playing, and I think maybe we've got some of our technical problems worked out. But when we come back here in 3 minutes, we will resume the program, as per usual, and have our guest with us this evening, Joseph P. Farrell. Please stay with us, folks. More Frankly Speaking Radio after this.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
Welcome back, my friends. Glad you're here. You're listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio Friday evening, Friday night, heading into the weekend and giving you some food for thought, something to chew on this weekend. You know, one of the things that I discovered, obviously, pretty quickly getting into talk radio, quite simply, is this. You better have your A game together. You better know what you're talking about. You better have your research done and be fairly well-versed in it. Well, because obviously I'm an amateur and amateur-ish researcher, it always impresses me to see the people who truly, truly rise to the top of their field in this department. And my guest this evening is exactly one of those guys. He has written a number of books, of course, and a new one on the way at some point very, very soon. Reich of the Black Sun, the SS Brotherhood of the Bell, the Giza Death Star, the Giza Death Star Deployed, and the Giza Death Star Destroyed. All by one Joseph P. Farrell. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, Frank. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Good. I'm excited that you're here with us.
Well, thank you for having me back.
Oh, it's an honor and a privilege, as always.
Well, the privilege is mine, my friend.
Well, thank you. You're very kind, and I'll get you that check out there today. So we should talk about this. Obviously, a lot of people would look at somebody like yourself and say, well, this guy's got two completely different interests. He's interested in Nazi technology, and he's interested in the Great Pyramid. These things
right.
are completely different, and there's no connection whatsoever. Is that true?
No.
There you go.
A good way to kind of illustrate the connection between the two is I talk in the third pyramid book, The Giza Death Star Destroyed, mm-hmm. about a Frenchman by the name of René Schwaller de Lubiche that in his day, he toward the early 19th, or pardon me, early 20th century, mm-hmm. in his day, he was really one of the world's great esoteric scholars. Mm-hmm. And he was also a mathematician. He had run in some very, I suppose you would say, exclusive kind of esoteric circles in Paris before World War II. And during World War II, he actually became enamored of the ideology and philosophy of the Nazis.
Mm.
But his specialty was actually what we would nowadays consider alternative Egyptology, because he was a scholar of all matters Egyptian. He wrote this massive, massive tome called The Temple of Man. I have a copy of it. It runs about $250. It's just an incredible work. If anyone out there has read this thing, they'll agree that it's just stuffed, and I mean literally stuffed, with all sorts of arcane knowledge.
Wow.
And de Lubitsch wrote this thing after spending about 30 years in Egypt studying the Temple of Luxor, and came to some rather astonishing conclusions in any way one slices it. But the fact that this man would have worked for the Nazis, and in particular his contacts were via the SS, which, as we know from previous programs that you and I have talked, the SS was involved in quite a few of its own rather arcane and pretty esoteric researches.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a connection between the two subjects. It may not seem like it, as you pointed out, but anyone who's read all four, or pardon me, all five of those mm-hmm. books will readily see that there are all sorts of connections between the type of physics, I think, that was at work in the Great Pyramid in particular, and some of the physics that the Nazis were investigating. And, you know, we can get into that as the night proceeds, but the bottom line is this, that if we approach it from that angle, from the alternative Egyptology angle, there's a connection via this very famous, very scholarly man.
Mm-hmm.
But if we approach it from the Nazi angle, there's yet another connection, because the history of the Nazi Party, it was actually kind of midwifed into existence prior to World War II, in the immediate aftermath of World War I, by a couple of very shady, very secretive societies that popped up in Germany after the end of World War I.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was called the Thule Gesellschaft. It was founded by a German baron by the name of Rudolf von Zibotendorf.
Wow.
And the other one was a fellow by the name of Lanz Liebenfels, who founded the Order of the New Templars. And it's that character, von Liebenfels, that many people credit as having kind of inspired Hitler's anti-Semitism and his belief in the Aryan race as being... Yeah, it's the secret society connections to the Nazi Party are definitely there.
Mm-hmm.
But no one really knows what to do with it. Even at the Nuremberg trials, a lot of this occult evidence and so on never really even made it into the open court. So the connections are there any way one wants to approach it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. It's kind of a hidden history, you know, in a certain sense.
Oh, without a doubt. And really, that's, like I said, the thing that has constantly and consistently blown my mind about your research and your writing, because it is captivating for anybody, really, to be able to see all that interconnectedness from these things that which appear to have no real connection. And I think that's a perfect example of how the whole world is set up. There's so many things that tie in with each other. It's just a matter of, like you and I were discussing the other day, you know, if you were to write down really just a book of current events, it'd be, you know, 26 volumes.
Yeah. Well, you know, you had Ralph Epperson on earlier this week, and I listened to that show, and one of the things that his research has brought out very well, and in particular his book, The Unseen Hand, is that these connections, once one starts digging into them, they are so many as to be statistically improbable to be coincidences.
Yes.
And this is really what I think the bottom line is. You know, if you were to ask for actuarial tables, you know, or bets to be laid on how many of these things would actually be coincidental, you probably wouldn't get any takers.
Right. That's
so
true.
The same thing holds true, you know, when we come to this subject of secret societies and their pursuit of alternative technologies and so on. And if we look at it that way, you know, we could honestly say that really the Nazi Party is the taking of power of one of the world's great powers, essentially by a secret society. And it really boils down to the fact that the Third Reich is the first attempt in modern history to set up a nation state on occult principles.
Wow.
It's in that sense a kind of a revival of things that were very, very old and very forgotten. It was an attempt to set up a society based on what they considered to be ancient principles of wisdom and so on and so forth. So there's just any number of ways that one could approach this whole thing.
It's really captivating when you look at it in that fashion. And just as you're saying that, I mean, new things, new connections are coming to my mind, of course, which is that for the most part, a lot of this stuff is deemed to be, I don't know, I guess you could call it conspiracy theory.
Right.
You know, people nowadays here in the 21st century, they don't even know that this stuff was actively sought, pursued, and it was relatively secretive then, but gosh, nowadays, it's just non-existent thanks to the wonders of television and movies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people poo-poo this stuff right off the bat. But, you know, as you're saying here, this idea of a secret society putting their goals into action, implementing some of these agendas and using it through politics, military, and science, and seeing what they could do with it. And what they did with it was unbelievable.
It was scary.
Yeah.
It's just downright frightening, actually. You know, we've talked before on your show on some of the things that the Nazis were able to achieve, you know, and we've still basically scratched the surface.
Yeah.
And, when we get right down to it, what I think has happened, or what I think all of this boils down to, if one takes those five books and kind of distills their basic essence, I think what we have is a case that can be made that there has been in existence since the flood an esoteric or underground secret society tradition that is attempting to rediscover or reconstruct, or in some cases to preserve, the ancient science that was lost or partially destroyed as a result of the flood. And you know, we can get into that later as we go, but I think it's very instructive that if we dig back far enough, and in the Third Pyramid book, the Giza Death Star Destroyed in particular, a lot of people overlook that book, but it really, in a way, is kind of the most important of the three books that I wrote on the Great Pyramid, because it deals with a lot of this esoteric philosophy and tradition. And one of the things that I've stressed there is that in almost every instance within the esoteric tradition, within Western European tradition of it, that the flood is kind of the linchpin for the beginning of it. In other words, with the destruction of whatever civilization existed prior to this moment in prehistory, the flood so changed things that there was an attempt made to preserve the knowledge of that pre-existing society. And in a certain sense, I think it was partially successful.
Wow.
And the other thing that I stress in that Third Pyramid book is that Masonry itself, if one looks at some of their central documents, like the Indigo Jones manuscript and so on, if one looks at these documents, Masonry itself stresses that it is a preservation or an attempt to recover that pre-existing or that pre-flood antediluvian knowledge.
Wow. You're just so captivating. Folks, you're in for a real treat this evening. If you've never heard my guest before, buckle your seatbelt. I'm just telling you, it's amazing stuff. We have a quick break, folks. We're back in 3 minutes, though, with our special guest, author, researcher, and just all-around hell of a guy, Joseph P. Farrell, and, of course, more Frankly Speaking Radio. Please stay with us.
Hi, this is Steve Shank with Fearless Radio and RBN, your only source for solutions to problems of troubled times. Do you realize that 3 years ago, the JMS Food Group warned people that there would come a time when if you didn't grow it yourself, or you already had it stored, you wouldn't dare eat it? Wait a minute. E. coli on our spinach and lettuce? That's our food you're talking about. You know where E. coli comes from? Feces, black water. In short, poop. We have to decide quickly to get all the food we're going to need. It's obvious that contamination can leave us hungry even before food shortages shut us down. For help ordering your food supply and protection from dishonest suppliers, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. On the phone, 800-409-5633.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Inc. patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, here's the number to call, 702-953-0267. Or visit www.lasemedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com. That number to call again, 702-953-0267. Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions Frequency Instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest-to-operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
Take it all lying down, 'cause once I get started, I go to town. 'Cause I'm not like everybody else. 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 And I don't.
Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. Our special guest this evening, author Joseph Farrell. Welcome back, sir.
Oh, thanks for having me, Frank. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's a real pleasure for me. I guess it was probably back in, 1981, 82, something like that. I was like 6 years old. And Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark came out. And as soon as I saw that movie, Joseph, I wanted to be an archaeologist. And obviously, I mean, I think all of us did at some point. But I retained that love all the way up through college, and I pursued all that. It was just a really, really deep interest for me.
Right.
And it still is to this day. So, you know, when I first came across your books about the Great Pyramid, the Giza Death Star series, I was blown away. And I could see how somebody might pick up one book and they read it, and it is so incredibly comprehensive, they would think, you know, how could there ever be a second book, let alone three? But every one of these is such a vital piece of the puzzle.
Right.
But what led you to the Great Pyramid?
Well, I kind of shared the same interest, and you know, it in a certain sense even probably was piqued a little bit by the same movie.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that there is all of this ancient lost technology, some of it perhaps recoverable.
Yeah.
and, you know, the fact that, that Nazis and bad guys are after it, and
it's amazing.
You know, and then it gets shuttled away into some big government warehouse and forgotten about,
yeah.
You know, is probably equally true.
Mm-hmm.
But what brought me to it was kind of also an interest that I've always had in physics. My father was an engineer, and for those that haven't heard this story, I'll relate it with the indulgence of those who have, but I was always kind of intrigued by the Great Pyramid because my dad, when I was very young, talked about it occasionally with friends that were playing cards, you know, that he was kind of in awe of how they managed to build this thing and all of its perfection. And that kind of got me started. It kind of lodged in the back of my mind and stayed there. But another incident was when we were taking a family trip. We traveled a lot, my parents and I, when I was a kid. And we were driving through North Dakota, and off in the distance, I saw the old phased array radar that had been constructed for the anti-ballistic missile system that President Nixon scrapped under the SALT I term treaty of I think it was 1972.
Mm.
In the terms of that treaty, of course, we gave that up. So sitting out in North Dakota, there's this old phased array radar, which looks like a pyramid with the top of it lopped off.
Mm.
And that kind of got me to thinking, well, you know, maybe the Great Pyramid was a military construction of some sort, that it was not necessarily a tomb for an Egyptian king, but some sort of machine that no one really figured out how to work.
Mm.
And then, of course, Chris Dunn's book, who's just a fabulous man and has done his own fabulous research on the Great Pyramid, a book called The Giza Power Plant, came out, and I heard him on a competing radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally was sleepless after hearing that interview, so I rushed out. I lived at the time in Tulsa, and I rushed out to a local bookstore that I knew would have a copy of this thing, and sure enough, they did, and I sat down and read it in one day's sitting, and it just blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because he makes an absolutely solid case that the Great Pyramid is a machine of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his idea is that it is for the production of electrical power using the principles of Nikola Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then I read also Zechariah Sitchin's Earth Chronicles series, and one of the books in that series is called The Wars of Gods and Men. And in it, he cites an ancient Babylonian text called the Lugal-e,
mm-hmm.
in which there are clear allusions to the Great Pyramid being a great weapon of mass destruction of some sort. And I kind of put all three of those ideas or strands together in these three books.
Mm. It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I love it. As somebody that is you know, looked into a lot of these things and again, you know, wondered about these things myself for so long.
Right.
To come across these books has just been amazing for me because, you know, jaw dropping on a regular basis, you know, every couple pages my jaw would open up and it'd probably be really comical to watch me read the books, but we'll get into some of that information.
Sure.
That really blows my mind. But what would be the concept here in general terms or specific if you prefer of how it would function? Because most people when they think of advanced technology,
right.
And this is probably why the pyramid has escaped most people's scrutiny for so
right.
long, because who thinks of a machine being made out of stone?
Stone, right, exactly. Well, to boil it down to its very simplest essence, it's based on a kind of physics that for want of a better term, I followed Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bearden's suggestion, and I call it scalar physics.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look into the principles of scalar physics, which I do in all of those books, it's based on nonlinear material. We can get to that after the break.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have to. It's just so captivating, and the time just obviously gets eaten up very quickly. Folks, please stay with us. Back in 3 minutes with the author of The Giza Death Star, and The Giza Death Star Deployed and The Giza Death Star Destroyed. Joseph Farrell is with us. We're back in three with more Frankly Speaking Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
Americans who already realize our nation is in deep trouble need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
Welcome back, folks. Glad you're here. You are listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whalen, and our special guest this evening is Joseph Farrell. And you can go to the website there, www.adventuresunlimitedpress.com. There should be a link at our website, of course, franklyspeakingradio.com. And you can go and peruse the numerous and prolific writings of our guest this evening. Welcome back, Joseph Farrell.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Oh, it's a pleasure, pleasure. We left off, we were talking about the technology, I guess, of a stone machine, in
right.
essence.
Well, we were talking about scalar physics, and to mm-hmm. kind of explain why this fits with the Great Pyramid, scalar physics relies on nonlinear mm-hmm. materials to create longitudinal waves in the medium, and I'll get to that in a second.
But, okay.
A nonlinear material, obviously, would be something like limestone or granite.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to have a fairly uniform distribution of this material when you're creating scalar devices. And again, we find that with the Great Pyramid. So in other words, it fills one of the bills for a machine based on these very highly advanced physics principles.
Mm-hmm.
Another type of nonlinear material that scalar physics uses is plasma.
Mm.
And I get into that a lot in the new book, incidentally, as to why that's so. And, of course, that touches on the Bell Project, the Nazi Bell Project,
yeah.
quite a bit. But in Dunn's reconstruction of the Great Pyramid as a machine, he actually maintains that hydrogen gas was used inside the structure in part to generate power for the optical cavity for a maser. So, in other words, I go a little bit further and speculate that by some mechanism that modern science does not know, something perhaps akin to cold fusion, this hydrogen gas may have been in a plasma state. And, of course, once we put that with the nonlinear material that the pyramid itself is constructed from, we have all the makings of some sort of scalar device. Now, let's explain what a longitudinal wave is, and I beg your listeners' indulgence while I set up kind of a thought experiment for them. Imagine if they were to be standing in a room and taking a rope and kind of letting it dangle loosely between them, and then one of them shakes the end of the rope, and of course that will transmit a sine wave, an S wave, from the person shaking it to the person holding it on the other end. Well, this is the way, this sine wave or Hertzian wave is the way that most electromagnetic energy travels. And as you can imagine, it's a very inefficient way to transmit energy. It takes a while for the wave to travel from one end to the other, and in the process, some of the energy that is put into the wave at the initial point is dissipated by the time it reaches the other point.
Okay.
Now, if the same two people were to take a yardstick and then place it between them, and then one person pushes on that yardstick, it immediately transmits all of that energy from the push to the other person. And that's a pressure wave. That's a longitudinal wave. Now, there are such things as longitudinal electrical waves, or kind of electroacoustic waves. That's how I refer to them in the books. And this is the type of wave that essentially Tesla discovered, and I think that the Nazis were tinkering around with the Bell Project, and it's the type of wave that I believe was actually the source of power that was put out by the Great Pyramid.
Wow.
It's a very powerful wave. Mm-hmm. And since it's a wave in the medium, or if you prefer, in the fabric of space-time itself, it's a stress, essentially, in space-time, so that you can literally stress something enough and literally rip apart a planet. You can do all sorts of things with those types of waves, including instantaneous communication, if you prefer.
Wow.
So it's a very flexible technology that we're dealing with, and a very powerful one. It's very, very different from the normal type of electromagnetic technology that we're used to in everyday life. It's definitely there, though, and I think that the case can be made that there's quite a great deal of suppression of this type of technology for very obvious reasons. So this is what I think that we're dealing with the Great Pyramid, and you know, it goes without saying that those three books are not terribly popular in a certain New Age crowd because, they want everything to be warm Disneyland fuzzies and Jonquils and Daisies back then.
That's true.
It is. And you know, the idea that this thing might have been an ancient weapon of mass destruction used in a war to blow up planets doesn't fit that bill.
No. If you think about it, I mean, this is one of the wonders of the world is a giant WMD. I mean,
right, exactly.
What does that say about the human race?
Yes, exactly.
Oh,
you know,
that's amazing.
Well, it's, you know, not, needless to say, there's a lot of people that do not believe in my hypothesis, and that's fine and dandy. I admit it's a very speculative one. But I do find it's very interesting. The last time I spoke at a conference with Chris Dunn that was hosted by my publisher, someone asked Chris Dunn what he thought the sarcophagus, the coffer, was in the Great Pyramid. Well, in his original book, he maintains that it's the optical cavity for a maser. But in the conference, he came out with the statement that he had been in touch with a physicist from a major national weapons laboratory who had convinced him that it was some sort of acoustic device. So, you know, my ears perked up at that, and after the conference broke up, I rushed over to Chris and I asked him, did I hear you correctly? And he kind of smiled and he says, yes, I thought that would catch your attention. So, you know, somebody out there, I think, is kind of... inadvertently latching onto my books that, that may be admitting that, that there is more in play here than just meets the eye.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because just like anything, when you know, you don't necessarily want to be right about these things, because that changes everything. That changes everything.
Yeah. It does. It does. Because what we're really saying is that this is... This machine or shell of a machine is the relic of a very, very sophisticated society, a very ancient one that predates Egypt by millennia. And I do present a certain amount of evidence in the three books that, that actually would date the pyramid to some point prior to the Great Flood, which most people date to around circa 10,000 B.C., I think probably the structure is much older than even that, and that it may, and I even get into this in the new book that's coming out, it may actually be a reconstruction of something that had been there long, long before that.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. So it's a situation where we not only have to consider the fact that that this is an advanced technology that is in part recoverable, but in the process of recovering it, we are to a certain extent having, by the nature of the case, to rewrite a lot of human prehistory.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, just looking at anything that, that would imply or outright accuse, I guess, the Egyptian people with you know, not having a hand in the building of the Great Pyramid. I mean, that's a source of national pride for them, obviously.
Sure,
so they take it very, very sensitive about these issues. So for something like this to come forward, this would just be devastating.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, you know, the Egyptian government, Zahi Hawass, who's kind of the czar.
He is bizarre.
You know, he may even run the Egyptian government, for all we know.
He's got a lot of power, that's for
he
sure.
He has a lot of power, and rightly so, because the Egyptians have a lot of antiquities that are priceless in so many ways, and he has to guard them carefully. So, you know, there's no problem there. But the fact of the matter is when people like John Anthony West or Robert Schock or Chris Dunn or myself or Stephen Mailer or anybody comes along with an alternative hypothesis about the Sphinx or the Great Pyramid or the Second Pyramid there, which is also a very interesting structure, any of these hypotheses that would look at them and see in the perfection of them something that could not have possibly been built by Egyptians using rollers and sleds and chisels and saws, you know, that's going to considerably cut into the Egyptian national pride. And,
yes.
And it's a natural reaction on their part, and I don't begrudge them that. But
sure.
I just think that when we get right down to it, those structures, the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx, the Valley Temples and the Second Pyramid there at Giza, are structures of such incredible precision and perfection that really the idea of the Egyptians having built them is just ludicrous. I've never been able to buy into it, you know. But that does put the burden back on us who believe in that approach, because we do have to come up with an alternative explanation of why they're there and who built them and for what purpose and so on. And, you know, unfortunately, my idea that at least the Great Pyramid and probably other structures there are some components in a vast machine using principles of physics that are only today just being rediscovered. And even there, you know, when we deal with these new principles of physics, they are off of the mainstream.
Yes.
And they're definitely there. They are documentable. They are traceable to certain papers in the scientific literature, but you have to know even what papers to look for in order to find this physics. So it's a very, very involved and complex story. It just goes in so many different directions, and that's probably why I had to write three different books to try and encompass it all.
And they're all amazing, every one of them. But you're right, you know, there's so much to this, and you just sort of briefly mentioned, you know, about what would go into creating something like this, as opposed to the official theory. And as you're mentioning it about, you know, you just see a bunch of slaves and hauling these, the pulling these giant stones on cut down trees and whatnot.
Right.
You know, it sounds so ridiculous when you say it that way. But you know, that's what everybody thinks. It's amazing.
Well, you know, one of the big engineering problems of this whole slave and ramp and pulley theory is that to build a ramp to build the Great Pyramid and get those enormous stones up there, the ramp itself would have been as big a building project as building the pyramid itself.
Mm.
So, you know, any way you slice it, you're compounded with engineering problems. And,
yes.
And on top of this, when we look at the alignment of the stones in the Great Pyramid itself and the alignment of the pyramid period, it is so perfect. The idea of, you know, Hollywood extras, slaves, Yul Brynner and Charlton Heston, hauling these enormous blocks of stone and aligning them so perfectly, it just really is stupid.
Yeah. It's true.
Another word for it.
That's exactly right. And you know, books like yours are going to change the way people see these things, to the point where, you know, we'll all look back and talk about it. Remember the those crazy ancestors of ours who used to think the world was flat and the pyramid was built by slaves?
Right.
You know, they'll laugh about it and say how stupid we were.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned the flat Earth idea, because I get into that in this new book coming out.
Oh, okay.
There is actually a astronomical context for that expression.
Really?
Yes, and it's a very, very old, ancient way of expressing the plane of the ecliptic of the galactic equator. Now, you know, when we look at that and say that, it means that the people that were using these expressions have an extremely sophisticated science, not a backward one. And
wow.
It's just that they choose a technical language that to us sounds naive and stupid, but the opposite is actually the case.
That's amazing.
You know, it's just like the idea of the four corners of the earth. Well, what does that mean? Well, if you look at ancient lore and get into it enough, it can mean two things, and again, both of them are extremely sophisticated notions, and I get into this a bit in the Giza Death Star series, and even more so in this new book coming out, that the four corners of the earth can refer to two things. One is the idea of a tetrahedron circumscribed in a sphere. So in other words, the four vertices of the tetrahedron touch on various points on the surface of the sphere that circumscribes it. So that's four corners of the earth or any other celestial body. And, you know, that would delight Richard Hoagland's ears, no end.
Yeah.
But... you know, and he is correct.
Mm-hmm.
This is the important point I'm trying to make. Hoagland is absolutely correct when he points these things out. Those physical evidences that he is maintaining exist on various celestial bodies are there, and they are tetrahedral in nature. But the other thing that the four corners refer to is the crossing points of Earth and the Sun in the signs of the zodiac, which is spread out on this galactic equator. So, in other words, we have a galactic context for some of these ancient expressions that if we really stop and think about it, that implies an astronomical science that is extremely well-developed and extremely sophisticated. So, you know, that in its own right implies a physics, a science, a technological sophistication, and a civilization that simply... regardless of how one attributes or sees the sophistication of ancient Babylon or China or Egypt or the Mayans, who did have a sophisticated astronomy, it's very apparent that those civilizations are legacies and could not possibly, with the technology that they did possess, come up with those types of observations.
Wow.
So it's coming from somewhere else. They are legacies of something much, much older. And if we assume that something much, much older is human, then we're in another pickle, because that means that mankind is of much, much greater antiquity than standard theory, evolution or anthropology or what have you, will allow. So, you know, any way we slice this, we're opening up a Pandora's box of just a massive amount of alternative ideas that fly in the face of conventional knowledge.
Wow.
Yeah.
Stunning in its implications. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Wow. I want to talk a little bit about this. Obviously, we're not going to have time because we're coming up on a break. But in the course of looking at the Great Pyramid as a machine that is capable of creating this sort of energy wave,
right.
What would need to be in place? Is this something that, you know, let's say the Egyptian government decides, you know, forget this whole, let's create nuclear weapons or nuclear power plant. Let's just restart the machine.
Oh,
I mean, is
God.
That something they could go and just like, assemble? Is it that easy to do if you know what you're doing?
Well, there are certain elements that are required to make a scalar weapon work. One is that you would have to have some sort of phased antenna array. Now, I happen to think that the presence of the other two large pyramids at Giza may be an indicator that this is not only a machine that involves one pyramid, but perhaps the whole compound in ways that we haven't figured out.
Mm-hmm.
But as I point out in the three pyramid books, there are missing components, and
okay.
we can get back to that after the break.
Yes, sir. Folks, amazing stuff from our guest this evening, Joseph Farrell. We're discussing, for the most part, although I'm sure we'll cross over back and forth, his book, The Giza Death Star, The Giza Death Star Destroyed, and The Giza Death Star Deployed, although not quite in that order, obviously. But yes, the whole trilogy and all the additional books as well. Stay with us. We're back in 3 minutes.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Inc. patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, here's the number to call, 702-953-0267. Or visit www.lasemedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com. That number to call again, 702-953-0267.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See headachestaygone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Attention, attention everyone. A brand new invention just released. It's called Wrist Ease, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. Wrist Ease comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse, or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, Wrist Ease is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. Wrist Ease is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. Wrist Ease provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order Wrist Ease now at wristease.com. That's Wrist Ease, WRISTEASE, wristease.com. Once again, that's Wrist Ease, WRISTEASE.com.
The best thing that-
Welcome back. Glad you're here, folks. Tail end of our first hour already, and we're spending it with our good friend Joseph P. Farrell, author of the Giza Death Star series. Three books in this trilogy, obviously, and just absolutely captivating. And, you know, I just, there's so many mysteries out there. A lot of people are very big fans of exploring, you know, outer space, and you know, people talk about even the president colonizing the moon and things like that, trips, manned mission to Mars. I think there's more than enough mystery right here on this planet, my friend.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And the moon and Mars we might be getting into later tonight.
Good.
Because
hey.
They're part of the same mystery.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Gosh. There's so much, and I love that. I love that we're in a world that's been created where things have that
right.
that connection between them, because I think it does lead from one to another to another.
Yep.
So finally you get a giant and almost incomprehensible picture. But you're making it easy for us to understand, and me, myself, as a self-admitted moron, I really appreciate that.
Well, I'm in the same boat, I'm afraid. It's really kind of fascinating because, you know, most of the research I do is based on other people's research. You know, there's two ways of being a scholar. One is to go out and do original research, and the other is to synthesize the research of others in mm-hmm. an original way.
And yeah.
That's kind of the tack that I take, mm-hmm. is that I pull on a lot of different sources and use them to examine some of these questions. And what pops out is pretty mind-blowing mm-hmm. when approached that way. But getting back to where we were before the break,
yes.
you know, I maintain that, like Chris Dunn, that there are components missing from the Great Pyramid, and this is readily appreciated when you go into the Grand Gallery, which is the long, narrow, high chamber in the Great Pyramid that leads up to the King's Chamber. Well, there are 27 little slots on the side of that chamber that were apparently used to place something mm-hmm. inside of there at one time, and whatever was it there is now gone.
What is conventional... I guess archaeology think, was there just different statues or something?
Well, this is the problem. Mm-hmm. I have yet to find any standard Egyptology line on what may have been in there.
Mm.
And this to me is a kind of a gaping hole in some of their theory, because
yeah.
in order to account for the tomb theory for the Great Pyramid, there should be something not only in that chamber, but in the other chambers inside of the structure, and those things have never been found. When the pyramid was first entered by the Muslims in the 9th century under, Caliph al-Ma'mun, nothing was discovered.
Wow.
You know, they were thinking that they were going to find great treasure and so on and so forth, but the thing was just absolutely stone-cold empty.
Mm. Amazing.
But there are, as Zechariah Sitchin has pointed out, there are ancient Sumerian texts that seem to refer to the Great Pyramid and to refer to an inventory of components inside of it that occurred at the end of a great war that was fought with nuclear weapons, of all things, just to get rid of the dang thing.
Wow.
And that some of these components were taken out, inventoried, and some hauled off for use elsewhere, and some destroyed. Now, that may sound kind of far-fetched unless we kind of put it in context.
Which I guess we'll be doing when we come back from this break.
Right.
Give us 90 seconds, folks, as we pause for station identification for our affiliates. You're listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio. Our guest this evening, Joseph P. Farrell. Go to the publishing website there at adventuresunlimitedpress.com and see the full catalog of this amazing writer. We're back in about 90. Stay with us.
You got a headache?